Gleok, Gleok, says the eagle. My son is lord over all. Today, after two nights, we're leaving the guest house. Susie is travelling back to the mainland, and Jeff and I are relocating to tents. We pack our bags and take one last look out at the view from the first floor window. Small cloud shadows dance across the Sunday landscape, where the sun is shining a spotlight, and behind this stage, Rum has retreated into a dark mist that envelops its peaks in a grey-blue. How different it looks to last night, when those very same hills were glowing red. For now, here on Canna, we're safe from the weather, and as we step outside, it feels like a May morning. We walk down to meet Jeff, who's already been out recording in the woods and down by the shore. On Magda's recommendation, we decide to walk around to St. Edward's Church, with recording equipment, in order to test the acoustics for singing. We begin to walk, chattering away, and then, after only a few minutes, Jeff suddenly stops. Did he hear something? He leans back to look up at the sky, holding his binoculars to his eyes, and points out a pair of white-tailed eagles, sea eagles soaring up high above us. Without the binoculars, they look so small, elongated dots moving in the clouds. We take it in turns to look through the lenses and the shape of the birds become visible. Long, broad wings with feathers like fingers. They're being followed closely by another golden eagle, slightly smaller and with a longer tail. Their territories must overlap on such a small island. Resuming our walk, we pass Magda's house and cross over the bridge to Sunday. With a big grin, Jeff tells us that he would like to show us something that he stumbled upon this morning. We follow him, and we're delighted to see three speckled grey eggs in a nest on the rocks. The eggs are those of a common gull, and the female begins to swoop across our heads, obviously wary of our presence. We leave her in peace, and walk back to the path. Then, a sound. Jeff stops to look up. The sea eagles are back, and they're calling to each other. In a race against their disappearing, Jeff sets up his recording equipment to capture these sounds. I lay down on the grass, clasping my camera, and zoom in on the pair of birds moving in a figure of eight. They lock their talons together, spinning briefly, and nearby another sea eagle is circling and begins to fly in at the pair, calling, shouting. Is he a competitor? In a story from the Western Isles I learnt from Kenneth Campbell, different birds are having a contest over who has the most handsome son. Gull, gull, says the herring gull. My son is beautiful and noble on the waves. Gag, gag, says the hooded crow. My son is the blue-grey juvenile.
Grok, grok, grok,
says the raven. My son will peck off the meat.
Gull, gull,
says the black-backed gull. My son will pick out the eye.
Gleok, gleok,
says the eagle. My son is lord over all. For a while, we stay still, observing, listening, until the eagles fly out of sight. I'm in awe of these elegant birds and their graceful movement, even whilst fighting. Like dancers, they create shapes on their stage of white clouds. My thoughts turn to the vocal composition, Away with the Birds. I begin to wonder about the way we move on stage when we perform. Could our movement be choreographed by directly observing and mimicking the movement of birds? If we can define the sounds that birds make as music, we call it birdsong, then can we also understand the movement of birds as dance? Some pairs of birds, like we witnessed with the white-tailed eagle, have distinct movements in their aerial courtship display, and larger flocks of birds often move in a way that can appear choreographed. Skeins of geese fly gracefully in V formations, and murmurations of starlings form tight, complex shapes that expand and contract. Is this synergy a dance? All this activity and excitement has filled our morning up to the brim, and so we won't make it to Sunday like we intended. It's getting closer to the time that Susie has to catch the ferry, so she kindly offers to use her remaining time to help Jeff and I put our tents up. We'll set up camp on Sunday by a beautiful bay where Magda suggested. We head back to get our bags. We have many to carry, including Jeff's equipment. But luckily, just as we set off, Winnie happens to be driving past in a Land Rover and slows down, kindly offering to take our things across the bridge and drop them at the Madonna, a little shrine on the Sando side of the bridge. We walk and collect our things there. The wind begins to pick up as we pitch our tents, and we wrestle with the currents of air that swoop and billow the tent material. It's almost as if the wind is playing a little game with us and would like to transform our shelters into kites. We pause to eat some lunch, sheltering in the porch of my tent, and then the rain begins, drumming gently onto the taut structure. I hope this is just a passing shower. I say goodbye to Susie, and Jeff kindly walks her to the ferry. I decide to have a nap. I didn't sleep very well last night, as I'm so excited about everything and so many ideas are emerging and unravelling. The sound of rain swiftly lulls me to sleep and I manage to drift off for 20 minutes or so. But then I'm awoken by the sound of lapwings calling. What a gift to be woken up by this sound, so instantly recognisable, like waves of electricity or oscillators. Refreshed, I leave the tent and make my way to Canna House in the safety of my coat, hat and hood to protect me from the rain.